Look to this day, for it is life, the very life of life. In its brief course lie all the verities and realities of your existence, the bliss of growth, the glory of action, the splendor of beauty. For yesterday is but a dream, and tomorrow is only a vision. But today, well lived, makes every yesterday a dream of happiness, and every tomorrow a vision of hope. Look well, therefore, to this day.
Before I do the reading, let me back up a little bit and tell you a little bit about your speaker this morning, Jim Checkley. He is a utility lawyer here in Austin, but he was trained in biochemistry and is a man of science, and he's going to talk about those things to you today in his sermon.
Human beings have the capacity to both know and believe. Knowledge casts light upon the world and forces superstition to hide in its shadows. And when we see things as they are and want them to be another way, that is when we dream. And having faith in our dreams, truly live our lives. For as Langston Hughes says in his poem about dreams, "Hold fast to dreams, for if dreams die, life is a broken-winged bird that cannot fly. Hold fast to dreams, for when dreams go, life is a barren field frozen with snow." We will now have a moment of silence. Well, good morning again. I have been coming to this church since 1977, and I've been doing services here since 1987, which makes this my 20th year doing sermons in this church. This year is also the 20th anniversary of my survival from advanced Hodgkin's disease. The timing of the two is not a coincidence. I started doing services after I survived cancer for two main reasons. The first was a sense of service that I developed after chemotherapy had ended, and I began to think about what to do with the rest of my life. The second was a selfish reason. You see, every time I do one of these services, I am forced to crystallize my thoughts and feelings about a subject that is near and dear to my heart. And the title of this sermon comes from an essay that I wrote back in 1993, which seems like a lifetime ago. That essay expressed my thoughts about thinking and believing as I understood them at that time, and was about 10,000 words long, which is about three sermons worth. Every year since 1993, I've considered doing When Thinking Is Not Enough, as each summer rolled around. But each year, something kept me from it. I suppose it needed to cook some more or ferment. But I don't actually know if I'm ready or not to do this sermon. But when I heard Kinky Friedman on 60 Minutes talk about putting the Ten Commandments back into the public schools, because in his words, quote, "you gotta believe in something," unquote, I realized that whether or not I was ready, the time had come. So here goes. Now, for those of you who are fearful that this is going to be a sermon about the Ten Commandments, relax, it's not. All I'm going to say about the Ten Commandments is that I can think of a bunch of stuff I'd rather have elementary school children see than the claims to worship of a jealous and angry God, along with injunctions against coveting one's neighbor's wife and committing adultery. Harry Potter is much better than the Ten Commandments at that age. But more importantly for today, this statement caught my attention because I have for a long time been interested in the assertion that you gotta believe in something, and the rather stark implication that whatever that something is that gets believed in doesn't matter just so long as it's something. These assertions encompass issues of what it means to be a human being, how best to live our lives, and are the subject of my talk today.
But I will begin today not by talking about believing, but by talking about thinking. The thinking I am talking about is critical or scientific thinking. I am using the word thinking here as a shorthand way of talking about the scientific process, certainly, but also to talk about the ability to examine in an objective way the many factors necessary to reason logically about the world and our place in it. Now, back when I was in law school, the phrase learning to think like a lawyer was very popular. That phrase comes from Paper Chase, first the movie and then the film, which were both based on Scott Turow's book 1L, which was about his first year of law school at Harvard. My thoughts then were that the notion of thinking like a lawyer was merely propaganda designed to make legal thinking seem special. It seemed to me that thinking clearly was thinking clearly, whether you were in a courtroom, a laboratory, or a football field. If thinking was like a lawyer was special, it was only because thinking, real thinking, was so rare that whenever we encountered it, we were amazed. Now, here's a true story from my law school days. I had gone to law school directly from my graduate program in biochemistry. About a month into my law school career, I realized that what our professors really wanted from us students was simply to think about the material and begin to construct our own vision and framework of the law, much as we human beings must create and live by a vision and framework of reality. So one day over lunch, I shared this revelation with some of my classmates. At the time, they were all fixated on the amount of material that had to be read and absorbed every day. And one of them said to me, quote, "That's easy for you to say. You're a scientist. You're used to thinking." Although I was shocked at that response, the truth is that thinking is often a very hard thing to do. Thinking involves figuring stuff out. It involves working and investigating and trying to put often seemingly disparate facts and observations together into a coherent whole that provides an explanation and does so in a way that reflects reality and can be tested against reality. Thinking and figuring stuff out also implies a willingness to accept the results and conclusions of the exercise, whether we are talking about a scientific experiment, an archaeological expedition, or deciding the objective truth content of certain religious claims like creationism. As humanist philosopher Professor Anthony Flew has commented, quote, "To maintain a belief while refusing to give due weight to reasonable and relevant objections is to show that you are more concerned to maintain that belief than really to know whether it or some other is, after all, true." Unquote. That is, thinking, unlike believing, requires us to be willing to incorporate into our frameworks of reality whatever answer it is we find. I have talked about this before, and it is why I recommend that when people make their frameworks of reality, they use nuts and bolts rather than welds in order to make the process of rearranging something a little easier should a girder prove to be wrong. This willingness reflects an attitude towards truth as well as an attitude towards being comfortable with what one believes. And I frankly think that this attitude, and not any inherent ability or inability to think about stuff, is often responsible for people accepting as true things that we all know are clearly not true. I also think it is one of the reasons that science seems cold and unfeeling to most people. It incorporates a just the facts, ma'am, requirement that reflects our acceptance of science as objective truth, as being a picture of reality whether we like it or not. Being dedicated to thinking, to science, to reason, and to objective reality means being willing to change a cherished belief whenever it is shown to be wrong, and to reconstruct our understanding of reality and the world, what I call our frameworks of reality, to match objective truth. I am and have for all my life been devoted to developing and maintaining a framework of reality that was true and that matched as closely as possible the reality revealed by science. As a matter of fact, when I was a young man, I was actually angry that people carried around frameworks of reality that didn't match what science said was true. I was exasperated to the point of madness. As a result, I insisted, sometimes loudly, that everybody be forced to accept what science tells us about the world and our place in it. I was incensed that people were running around wearing rose-colored glasses that allowed them to believe in the most ridiculous things. I was evangelical in my position, and I saw it as almost a sacred duty to destroy their ridiculous beliefs, which I attempted to do with great energy, passion, and abandon. Now, although I am still occasionally accused of not suffering fools gladly, I have over the years mellowed in my position. Oh, I'm still a scientist, and I accept and marvel about what science has taught us about ourselves, our world, and our place in it. That will never change. And I'm strongly opposed to the imposition of beliefs, for example, fundamentalist religious beliefs, on people. That, too, will never change. But I began to realize that there was more to life than objective truth, more to living than simply being right about evolution or Copernicus or the Big Bang Theory. Science was a good explanatory tool for placing ourselves in the cosmos, but a mediocre one for understanding how best to make use of the unalienable rights asserted by Thomas Jefferson of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So, as much as I am devoted to the picture of reality that is provided by science and conforming my framework of reality to the truth that science reveals about the world and our place in it, there is something missing from that picture. In particular, accepting evolution does not teach us how to live our lives, what is right and wrong from a human perspective, and how to find happiness. Neither will we find our answers in thinking and logic. They are simply not enough. The problem is that science and its proponents have not done well in articulating a philosophy, a story, if you will, that is able to provide meaning to the heart and soul as well as the mind. In fact, many scientists run away from the exercise or argue that it's not science's job to address those issues. But I think that we who understand science and accept the evidence of the world that it provides are tasked with the formidable job of constructing a meaningful philosophy of life that appeals both to our hearts and to our intellects. The fundamental questions of human existence are not answered by science. They persist, and it is up to us to provide answers to quality of life issues that provide meaning and hope in a finite world. Now, having said that mouthful, I have no illusions of trying to articulate such a philosophy today. But I will say that I have become convinced that human beings do need to believe in something, and that it matters a great deal how and what they believe in. Albert Einstein said that imagination was more important than knowledge. I agree with him. Imagination and belief provide human beings with powerful tools for understanding human existence and finding their way in the world. They are tools that those of us who are devoted to science and objective reality may be suspicious of, may even hold in contempt given the nonsense that people often believe, but they are powerful nonetheless. While it is true that people believe in many truly weird things, and it is easy to dismiss the value of belief on that basis, belief nonetheless is an important human attribute. I think it can and should be harnessed to make life better. And for those of you who need a reason to accept why this is so, I am going to talk for just a minute about how our brains work, and how imagination, believing, and faith all have neurobiological foundations. Now, I tried to make this not be abstract, but it is. But I think that we'll do okay. Each and every one of us has a framework of reality within which he or she operates. That framework is comprised of both objective truths and beliefs. This is because no person has a complete objective understanding of the world. There are holes, gaps, if you will, in our rational understanding of things. Not only is our knowledge of the world incomplete, sometimes we simply can't know things, like the future or the past. And either because we need to, or because we just can't help it, human beings fill in the gaps with something. And that something is made up out of our imaginations and may or may not reflect the patterns of reality. Neurobiological research teaches us that our brains do the filling in automatically, and it is such an integral part of who we are that we sometimes do not even know that it has happened. But what is really interesting about imagining things is that our bodies react to them as if our imaginings were real. You all know this. You know that if I ask you to imagine how you would feel if you won $1 million, the feelings you experience now would be similar to those that would probably occur then. But what research has shown is that our bodies actually respond physiologically to what we imagined. In this sense, our bodies can't really tell the difference between what we imagine is happening to us and what really happens to us. Think for a moment about chewing up a bucket of worms and you'll see what I mean. Now, this applies to everything we imagine. Our brain and our bodies react to imagined objects and events just as they do to real objects and events. Why might this be so? Well, when we imagine, we send information from our memory banks or from our imaginations to the area of the brain that processes that particular kind of information. So, for example, if we remember what our first car looks like, the memory information is sent to the visual cortex area of the brain, and the visual cortex processes the data, and we see our car. Now, the visual cortex can't tell whether the data was remembered, invented, or freshly seen. It simply processes the data, and in this case, creates an image. So our bodies respond as if it were real. Now, because our brains automatically fill in whatever gaps exist in our framework of reality, whether they are cosmic or trivial, we can't help but believe in things, we human beings. It happens as a part of our desire to have smooth and complete understandings of things, and of our desire to have answers, even if we have to make them up. And these desires are desires that we fulfill through both knowing and believing. Believing is simply part and parcel of our natures and a necessary and unavoidable part of our frameworks of reality. As a consequence, if we believe in something, invest ourselves in it, and are convinced that it is true, then when we imagine things in the context of that belief, going to heaven, for instance, our emotional and physical reactions are the same as if these things were objectively true. Doesn't matter if heaven exists or not. When we believe in it and then imagine things based on that belief, heaven may just as well exist as far as our responses are concerned. This phenomenon helps explain why believing is often more powerful and more satisfying than simply knowing things, and why belief is to many people such an attractive option over the cold, hard facts of science. Despite the danger of believing in weird, incorrect, or bizarre things, I think that beliefs have an important role to play in our lives. While we must continue to insist that our vision of reality conform to our best knowledge and understanding, we must also acknowledge that it is the power of belief and faith, properly understood, that tend to give meaning and motivation to our lives. Beliefs are the way we anchor our dreams. Knowledge is the way we go about making them come true. Thinking is a mechanism. Believing is a way of life. Along these lines, I think it's interesting that belief and not knowledge is how we define ourselves. Sure, we say that somebody is smart, but if all we know about you is that you can recite the entire contents of the Encyclopedia Britannica, we would know very little about you as a person, except that you had an excellent memory. We wouldn't even know for sure if you could win on Jeopardy, because we would know so little about you as a person, and knowledge is simply not enough to win. But if we started to be told your beliefs, then we would begin to assemble a picture of who you are, what kind of person you are, how you see the world and your place in it. Thus, beliefs don't just go hand in hand with understanding. They reflect in many ways actually who we are. That is, some beliefs go so deeply to our core that we can no longer distinguish the collection of personality traits we call a person from the beliefs that person holds. They are too intertwined, too enmeshed with each other. I am sometimes tempted to say they are the same thing. Now, it is important not to limit belief to religion and thinking to science, and thereby create a false dichotomy that tempts us to throw the proverbial baby out with the bathwater. In this regard, I think that faith is an important part of being human, regardless of one's religious beliefs. My definition of faith, however, is probably different from what many people think. For me, faith provides a foundation for hopes and dreams within the framework of reality otherwise established by reason and science. This is because real faith allows us to believe in something that isn't true today in order to make it true tomorrow. Whether it is faith in ourselves, our friends, and institutions such as this church, or simply what is right and wrong, faith is necessary for us to be able to invest ourselves fully in something we care about that is both uncertain and unknown. Having said that about faith, I want to take about 30 seconds to say something about religious fundamentalism. Religious fundamentalism is a throwback, an attempt to turn back the years and the centuries to a time when sacred scriptures set out both the cosmology of the world and the right rules for living. The problem with fundamentalist religions is that they are an attempt to create order in the world by claiming that a set of myths and wishful thinking actually represents the underlying bedrock reality of the world, and the rules developed by human beings over centuries are the rules of the one omnipotent God. These religions obviously satisfy an important need for many people, since they have been and continue to be the fastest growing religions in the world. We need to understand that. They are and have been the fastest growing religions in the world. Now, I cannot understand that. But my lack of understanding doesn't change the fact that over the last 30 years, religious fundamentalism has gone from the fringe to a commanding position in the mainstream. But those are issues for another day and another sermon. What's important from my perspective today is that whether people wear bracelets that say WWJD, or What Would Jesus Do, or yellow bands that say Live Strong, they are all trying to draw upon our best stories of our best natures to understand what is good, right, and leads to a fuller, happier life. As much as I reject the foundations of fundamentalist religion as objective truth, and as strenuously as I will fight their imposition on me and society, I accept that those people who believe in it are trying to do the same thing we are, figure out how to live happy, productive, and meaningful lives. That I frequently vehemently disagree with them over issues like stem cell research and the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, two issues that our federal government made big mistakes on this past week, is merely evidence that it does indeed matter very much what one believes, very much indeed. I have been a Unitarian for over 30 years, and my scientific framework of reality survived cancer. So I feel a little like the expression, only Nixon could go to China. When I say that we Unitarians have traditionally lived in the cancer ward of belief. By that I mean that Unitarians historically have valued knowledge so much that they were convinced that knowledge should replace belief like truth replaces falsity. I used to be one of those who condemned belief and who crowned scientific knowledge as the be-all and end-all of human understanding. But that's not possible, you see. While critical thinking is absolutely necessary, belief is an important component of who we are as human beings. Saying that thinking is enough, that knowledge is the ultimate trump card, misconstrues the things we human beings truly value in our lives, and more importantly, the way human beings actually function in the world. Let me close by saying that today I stand before you as a man of science, trained in chemistry, physics, biology, mathematics, and law. My understanding of reality is based in fact, not fancy, and despite dealing with advanced cancer and the prospects of an early death, I insist that those facts be accepted into my framework of reality, no matter how much I may dislike them or how much they may disrupt my preferred vision of the world and my place in it. I embrace my existence as a natural part of the natural world and will take my chances with truth as revealed by science and critical thinking. Nonetheless, I also say to you that I believe in dreams and I have faith in the power of imagination to make them come true. I believe in love and its ability to delight, satisfy, heal, and transform a soul as the sharpest knife can cut a shape on a lathe. I believe in the future and see it from the inside out, cast in our best image and lighted by our most ardent hopes. I believe in all these things and more. It is the most human thing I do. Amen and amen.